Our listeners will recall that we are in the midst of the series of tales about Rav Baruch Batlin, the great-grandfather of the Alter Rebbe, the grandfather of Rav Baruch, who was a Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov and the father of the Alter Rebbe, and we're relating the story of the Baal Shem, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, and how in the town of Poznan there was a goldsmith whose name was Shlomo Tuvia, who did not conduct himself properly, and after his passing, the house which he previously had lived in was infested by Nidgute, by unholy spirits. How the Baal Shem had told Rav Baruch Batlin to go with a minion with Sifrei Torah and to transform his Avraham Tuvia's apartment into a Beis HaMedrash, and indeed the unholy spirits left, but after several weeks they appeared again, not in the Beis HaMedrash itself, but in the basement, and they started making noises as before. There was a certain individual, Rav Shlomo Moshe, who was a vehement opponent of Kabbalah and of the Baal Shem, and he said that this was all happenstance, and while the other people in the town wanted to send an emissary to get to Baal Shem himself, to Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem, to come down himself to finally, once and for all, get rid of these unholy spirits, even from the basement, Rav Shlomo Moshe said that this should not be done because this is Hepech HaTorah, it's forbidden to be done. And then something happened which stirred up the town anew, and which caused Rav Shlomo Moshe to change his mind, and this is where we are up to now. Rav Shlomo Moshe, although he was a great Torah scholar, at the same time was a merchant, a businessman. He dealt in furs, and he used to keep his pelts in the cellar of the house. One day, a furrier came to Shlomo Moshe and wanted to see some of the skins. So he sent his son Menashe, who helped him in the business. That means Shlomo Moshe's son, Shlomo Moshe sent his own son Menashe to go down into the cellar with the furrier. In order to reach the first storage, they had to open a trap door to the cellar floor. And no sooner did they do this than the door flew open of its own accord, and out came the most frightening monster they had ever seen. The furrier went white with fright, and Shlomo Moshe's son, unfortunately, lost his reason. He became insane from fright, and they both ran screaming from the cellar into the street. When they had run to safety, they both swooned from terror. People ran to their aid, and after trying all sorts of methods of respiration, the two finally recovered consciousness. They scarcely knew what had happened to them. The furrier was completely dumbstruck, and Menashe rambled on in such a mad way that no one could make any sense out of what he said. He beat out wildly with his hands and would allow no one to approach him. He was eventually overpowered, bound with rope, and made harmless. Now, even Shlomo Moshe did not protest when it was decided that there was no way out but to call on Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem to come and save them by driving the horrible monsters away for good. Upon being asked to come, Rabbi Yoel responded that he would come immediately, which he did, and when Rabbi Yoel came, he made a thorough investigation into what had taken place in the cellars beneath the Beis HaMedrash. On the following Wednesday, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem called the chief of the Beis Din and asked that he and the other members of the Beis Din should take upon themselves to fast in preparation for a Din Torah which he would have before them with the creatures, the so-called trial to take place in the Beis Medrash, in which was the late Avigdor Tuvia's apartment. The members of the Beis Din began their fast that evening, and next day, after davening, they sat down to await the arrival of Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem. Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem arrived, and after coming into the Beis Medrash, which was the late Avigdor Tuvia's apartment, Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem called out for the unholy spirits to make an appearance, telling them that as they made their appearance, or as they would be leaving, that they had no reshus, they had no permission, that they dare not hurt anyone while they came or left, as well as while they were there. As soon as the invisible spirits made their presence felt before the Besdin, the Baal Shem arose and called out, "You evil spirits, I call you to a din Torah, because you have exceeded the limits which the Almighty has placed upon you, and you have come amongst humans." There immediately followed the queerest of noises, but it was impossible to get any clear meaning from them. Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem then turned to the Besdin and said, "By the power of the Holy Torah, and by the power of the Besdin, I ask you to decree that one of these creatures be enabled to speak and make himself understood clearly." The head of the Besdin, the head of the court, then arose and did as the Baal Shem Tov had asked. A voice was then clearly heard, which said that if the creatures had exceeded their limits, it was at the command of their leader Ashmedai, who was their prince. "But Ashmedai has no right to send you among humans," retorted the Baal Shem. "Your place is in the wilderness, in empty wastes and forests." Again came the voice which had spoken previously, and this time it said, "Indeed, we have every right to come here, for we are the rightful heirs of Avigdor Tuvia and his wife Gittel. We were created by their evil thoughts and curses. This house rightfully now belongs to us." The Baal Shem, however, had a ready answer. He said, "In no way could these creatures regard themselves as heirs of human beings, for the good angels which were created by people's good deeds, and the bad angels which were created by bad deeds, performed their function when, after a person's death, they pleaded for him or argued against him as to his ultimate destiny. But neither the good angels nor the so-called bad angels could lay claim to being heirs to a human's possessions." The voice was again heard in protest, saying that they had no intention of leaving the cellars, as they were there on the order of Ashmedai. And it was his order that they obeyed, and no one else's. They would not have left the upper part of Avigdor Tuvia's apartment either, but when the holy scrolls of the Torah were brought there, they created such a dazzling light that the creatures could not stand it, and took refuge in the cellars below. But nothing would get them to move from the cellar. When the creature's delegate concluded his speech, he began to crow and squeak. This was taken up by the whole tribe of creatures. Everyone present in the Beis HaMedrash was terrified. Everyone, that is, except the Baal Shem of Zamaksh, who now called out at the top of his voice, "You demons and evil spirits, I command you in the name of the holy name which emerges from the verse Yipol Mitzitcho Elef Urimvovo Mimineho Eilecho Lo Yigosh, 1,000 shall fall by your side and 10,000 on your right, shall not be able to approach you, that you be silent immediately, and from then on you are to remain hidden from human eyes. You are to prepare yourselves to listen to the ruling of the Beis Din Tzedek and carry out their every instruction. Do not dare injure any person, nor give out your nasty odor, nor your smoke anymore." perfect silence followed the words of the Baal Shem of Zamaks, while all the creatures suddenly disappeared. The members of the Besdin, as well as the members of the congregation who were present in the Beis HaMedrash, rubbed their eyes in astonishment. They were absolutely thrilled at what had just transpired before their very eyes. The Besdin remained thoughtful. They had to issue their verdict without delay. They unanimously declared that those demons had no right to any share the inheritance left by Avigdor Tuvia the goldsmith and his wife Gittel. As soon as the verdict was given, a sound of muffled crying was carried through the air. "Did you hear the verdict?" called out the Baal Shem. "You are to leave this house immediately, without hurting anyone and without doing any damage. You must carry out the verdict now, on the spot." The Baal Shem Tov then turned to the congregation and told them to recite Ketores, the portion about the incense offering, then to rise and to daven mincha to recite the afternoon prayer. From that day onwards, those dreadful creatures, the demons, were never again seen or heard in that house. The Baal Shem stayed for another week in Poznan after the affair of the haunted house. He was immediately besieged with requests from all the citizens of Poznan, begging that he give them his blessing. He had at that time brought a cure for the furrier, who had lost his power of speech from the fright that the demons had given him in the cellar, and the Baal Shem also restored the power of reason to poor Menashe, the son of Shlomo Moshe. All the above was part of the story that Rochel, the mother of Verleye and Raboruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, related to her daughter Tverleya. She also related that Baruch Batlan had had 9 children, but that only she, Rochel, and her brother Binyamin had survived. Their parents therefore took this opportunity of the Baal Shem Tov's visit to ask his blessing that these 2 children should have long and healthy lives. Rochel now told her daughter Tverleya that she just about remembered when, as a very young child, remember she was about 2 or 3 years old then, she was taken by her parents to the Baal Shem, who gave them the blessing asked of him. In conclusion, Rochel said to Tverleya, "And now, dear daughter, you know something of my ancestry. I would also like you to know that there always existed a marked difference in the training of the children of between those who followed in the ways of the Mekubalim and those who followed the Misnagdim, especially where girls were concerned. The Talmidim of the Rabbi Yoel Baal Shem and other Mekubalim thought it right to give their daughters a Torah education no less than their sons, accepting that it was of course adapted to their needs and capacity. Thus it was that Baruch Batlan, like the true follower of the Baal Shem, that he was, saw to it that I, his daughter, should be taught Torah. I began to study Torah at the age of 5 and continued for 13 years, during the whole of which time my father would examine me to see how I was progressing. When I was 15 years old, I was learning Gemara. But your dear father," continued Rochel, "belongs to the Misnagdim and believes that it is wrong to teach girls Torah. That is why you have not been taught," concluded Rochel, in sympathy to Tverleya, who very much wanted to learn, as you will recall from previous installments. Tverleya now wanted to know more about her mother's ancestors, who you will recall were named Portugaler because they came from Portugal. She knew that her mother's father, Tverleya's grandfather, Baruch Batlan, had come from Spanish and Portuguese Jews who had been driven out from their countries. These were sympathizers of Kabbalah, which was always a definite part of their education. Baruch Chu was from his youth, that means Baruch Matlan was from his youth brought up in the spirit of Kabbalah. Rachel's mother also came from a well-known family in Poznan who were proud of the fact that their ancestor was the famous Goen Reb Shlomo Luri, the great Mekubal and Talmudist known as the Marshal. Now, Dvar Leah's father, Shneur Zalman, had as his ancestor the Maral of Prok. Shneur Zalman's father, Moshe, was the fourth generation from the Maral, Rabbi Yehudi Levo. The Maral was born in the year 5272 in 1512 and was himself the son of the Goan Rabbi Tzau, who was the fifth generation from the Goan Rabbi Yehuda Levo of Worms, who died in the year 5200, about 1440. On his tombstone, there was an engraved inscription stating that he, Rabbi Yehuda Levo, was a direct descendant of David HaMelech, of King David. Rachel had much to tell her daughter about the family traditions relating to the Maharal of Prague. Those traditions and how the Alter Rebbe, descendant from the Maral, and various stories of the Maral, God willing, in the coming installments.